It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore the resumption of federal student loan repayments as they become due in October and learn about what Wisconsinites with student loan debt should be aware of. Your question, your thoughts are welcome at any point. Call in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Betsy Mayotte is president and founder of the Institute of Student Loan Advisors. Betsy, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, it's, you know, been more than 3 years since someone has had to make a payment on federal student loans. And then we see in June, the Education Department announced this 12-month on-ramp to repayment that spans from this October to the end of September next year. What does this grace period mean for borrowers?
That's a great question, because I think there's a lot of confusion around what the on-ramp means. So it doesn't mean that payments aren't due. Payments definitely are going to be due starting in October. But the Department of Ed recognizes that after a three-year pause and the fact that all 40-some-odd million borrowers are all re-entering repayment at exactly the same time, there could be some hiccups. So they wanted to make sure there was somewhat of a soft landing. So what the on-ramp means is that if you should miss a payment, it's not going to negatively affect your credit, nor will you be at risk for default during this period. Now, you're still going to be due the payment. Interest is still going to accrue. You'll still get past due notices and maybe some calls, but there won't be any late fees, and it won't negatively affect your credit report.
So what should borrowers consider before they choose to miss payments during this period of time?
Well, rather than choosing to miss payments during this time, I would recommend they look into other options. There are a myriad of lower payment options, many of them based on their income. And if their income is low, sometimes those payments can be as low as $0. If none of those payment plans work, there are other tools that you can use to just outright postpone the payments, such as deferments and forbearances.
Are you worried about this moment? Are you concerned about payments resuming?
I mean, it was going to happen at some point. My concern lies with, you know, first of all, the economy is very different than it was 3.5 years ago. Things like housing and gas and lettuce cost a lot more than they did, and wages haven't necessarily kept up with that. So I worry about people that might have not had a problem affording their payment pre-COVID that might struggle now, and that they have access to the information they need to adjust the payment to something that is affordable. And then I also worry about just the volume. I mentioned a second ago, we're in an extraordinary time in student loans and with every borrower coming due at exactly the same time. And that's going to cause delays. It's going to make it difficult for borrowers to reach their loan servicers just because of the sheer volume. So I do worry a little bit about, especially some of the more vulnerable borrowers, getting sort of left behind as we sort of sort through all of this and get everybody back on track.
And I think we have to realize that in the mix of these borrowers are those who have never done this before. They are new to the repayment process. What should they know and consider?
For borrowers that are new to the system, they should know that, as I mentioned, there are lots of options available if your payment's unaffordable. So don't freak out, I guess is the short answer to that. We also have a lot of tools online that you can use to help educate yourself about what your options are and help you figure out what the best payment plan might be for you. My favorite tool out there that I think is the most useful is the studentaid.gov website, which is the Department of Ed's website. There's a ton of information on there, but also there's something called the Loan Simulator. And you just need to plug your information in once, and it's going to tell you what your monthly payment's going to be under all the payment plans you're eligible for in one fell swoop, and help you apply for that.
So studentaid.gov, that is run by the Department of Education. So that, you think, is just a treasure trove of resources for borrowers.
That would be my go-to. If I could only recommend one website, that would be the one I would recommend for sure.
Talking about student loans, federal student loans in particular, Betsy Mayotte, president and founder of the Institute of Student Loan Advisors. You can join in with your questions and your perspective at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Betsy, your organization provides advice to student loan borrowers. What questions are you hearing from them?
Boy, our volume is high. Yeah, our TISLA was founded to provide free student loan advice to all consumers. So anybody can email us through our website if they need help. But I think probably 80% of the borrowers we're hearing from right now are asking for help choosing a payment plan. There's some borrowers that have read all the things already, but they just want to make sure that they understand them correctly and that their chosen strategy is the right one. And then there's other borrowers that are just completely overwhelmed and just say, you know, here's what I owe in loans. Here's my income. You know, what help me, you know, pick a plan for me.
Are we going to see more or less defaults on student loans here?
In the immediate future, we're going to see less because of that on-ramp. Nobody's going to default over the next 12 months. After that, I do have a fear that we might see a blip in increased defaults, just as, you know, sort of fallout from the 3.5-year pause. But I think over the long term, especially because of some of the new plans that the Biden administration has introduced, I think the default rate is going to level out or maybe even decrease a little bit over the long term.
And your organization helps resolve federal student loan disputes. What issues do you typically assist in resolving?
So that is one of the other services we offer. A lot of times, it depends on the nature of the dispute. A lot of times what we're doing is educating the borrower on how to advocate for themselves. What's the correct, depending on the situation, what's the right avenue to get resolution? Is it by escalating through their servicer? Is it by filing a complaint with the Department of Ed's Ombudsman's Office? Is it by filing a complaint with the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau? In other situations, really more complex, especially situations that are sort of really deeply embedded in the law and regulations, we will ask the borrower to give us a third-party authorization and we'll sort of step in for them to try to help them resolve it. We get a lot of disputes about things like public service loan forgiveness, delays in processing, you know, payment plan applications sometimes, borrowers concerned about how their payments are being applied, borrowers that feel like they were defrauded by their schools, looking for remedies for that. Those are probably the most common complaints we get.
Sounds like borrowers must be really strategic, proactive communicators.
I mean, for any type of debt situation, the best advocate is yourself. And the way you can be the most effective advocate for yourself is to educate yourself as to what your rights and responsibilities and options are under that particular debt. And that definitely falls true with federal student loans.
Betsy Mayotte leads the Institute of Student Loan Advisors, worked in the student loan industry doing compliance and advocacy for over 25 years. Call in with a question or bring your perspective. The number is 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Millions of people with student loan debt are about to re-enter the repayment process after a 3-year pause. Over 700,000 Wisconsinites carry federal student loan debt. That's according to a 2020 analysis by UW-Madison Research Center. Call in with your question. Share your thoughts. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Betsy Mayotte, president of a nonprofit assisting borrowers. It's called the Institute of Student Loan Advisors. Let's bring in Deborah in Eau Claire with a question. Deborah, hi.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, during the pause, my son just kept making payments on a student loan, and my question is, did those payments go toward the principal, or did they just go toward the interest? That's my question. Thank you.
Thanks, Deborah. That's a great question. So unless your son had a bunch of outstanding interest that accrued prior to the pause, then those payments would have gone exclusively to interest. Now, if he did have some interest that was sort of sitting out there that accrued prior to the pause, that would have had to have been paid off first before the rest of the payments would have gone to principal.
Okay, so basically, if there wasn't that outstanding interest, then those payments that Deborah's son made would have gone to principal. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Deborah, does that make sense?
Well, kind of, but I mean, isn't there always interest?
During the pause, for the vast majority of federal student loans, not all of them, some people with older loans weren't eligible for the pause. But for the federal student loans that were eligible for the pause, not only weren't payments due, but there was a 0% interest rate for that whole 3.5 years.
Deborah, thank you so much for the call. Robert now in Heartland. Robert, what is your question?
Well, good morning. Just a question between forbearance and deferring. I know those are two options. If you could explain that.
Forbearance versus deferring, Betsy.
Yeah. So, Robert, both of those things are exactly the same, except where they're different. Both of those are tools that can be used to completely postpone payments. The main difference between a deferment and a forbearance is that if you have subsidized loans, then if you're in deferment, no interest will accrue on the subsidized portion of your loans. If you're in forbearance, interest accrues on all of the loans.
Okay. Robert, does that help?
It does. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let's bring in Jane now in Suamico. Jane, hi. What would you like to bring up?
I would like her to speak to the different kinds of student loans. I think a lot of students get confused, or their parents too get confused, about federal versus state loans versus private loans.
Yes, there are so many different types. Betsy, go ahead.
Absolutely. So there are multiple types of student loans. There are federal loans, there are private loans, there are state loans. Sometimes there's even what we call institutional loans. They're not as common these days, but they still exist, that the borrower or the student borrows directly from the institution that they're attending. In general, federal student loans are considered the safest bet. They may not have the lowest interest rate, but they have the most safety nets, things like lower payment options, forgiveness options, discharge if something really bad happens. Private loans tend to often have the least amount of safety nets, unfortunately. They act very much like other types of consumer loans. If you're unable to make the payment or the payment is too high, there's not a lot that the lenders are allowed to do in those situations. I'm not saying that private loans don't have their place, but they should be approached with caution and education for sure. State loans, it depends on the state. There are some state loan programs that are very generous and are good options, especially for lower income families. For example, here in Massachusetts, we have a no interest loan that's available through the state. But there's other state loans that, you know, some might argue are outright predatory. So just like any time you're taking on any type of consumer debt, it's really important to read the terms and conditions and do your homework before taking on the loan. But again, in general, I would say 99.999% of the time, federal loans are the way to go.
Jane, thanks for the call. Betsy, we saw in August the Biden administration announcing a new plan called Saving on a Valuable Education, SAVE. The plan is one of several income-driven repayment plans offered by the U.S. Department of Education. What makes this new plan different from others?
Yeah, so this is really exciting. As you mentioned, we already have several what we call income-driven repayment plans. And again, those are all exactly the same except where they're different. But what makes the SAVE plan unique, and in many cases a better option for especially borrowers who have high debt and lower income, is first of all, it's probably going to result in the lowest monthly payment for you amongst the income-driven plans. And that's because they're subtracting a greater percentage of the poverty level from your adjusted gross income to calculate your payment. Most of the other plans subtract 150% of the poverty level based on your family size from your adjusted gross income. And the SAVE plan subtracts 225%. So that alone can result in a lower monthly payment. But what's even more exciting about the SAVE plan is the interest subsidy. If your payment amount that's calculated under the SAVE plan is less than the amount of interest that accrues on your loan on a monthly basis, that additional interest is going to be forgiven. So you don't have, if you're on the SAVE plan, your balance is never going to go up. And, you know, even if you have a $0 payment and owe, because your income is low and you owe $100,000 in federal student loans, your balance isn't going to go down in that scenario, but it's definitely not going to go up, which is one of the critiques of the other income-driven plans, is that you can have a lower payment, but the interest is still accruing. There isn't as generous of an interest subsidy, so your balance might actually be going up even as you're making a payment, and that's not going to happen on SAVE.
Talking with Betsy Mayotte, president and founder of the Institute of Student Loan Advisors, as we examine what federal student loan borrowers need to know ahead of payments resuming in October. You can join the conversation with your question at 800-642-1234. Betsy, with the SAVE plan, does the SAVE plan cover Parent PLUS loans?
That's technically no. However, there is a loophole out there where Parent PLUS borrowers can make themselves eligible for SAVE. Now, to be clear, this loophole is completely legal. They are closing that loophole effective July of 2025. So if Parent PLUS borrowers want to take advantage of, we call it sort of tongue-in-cheek, we call it the super secret double consolidation method.
Goodness.
And it's a little complicated to sort of explain over the radio. I would encourage people that think they might benefit from this to go to our website, which is freestudentloanadvice.org, and click on the consolidation page, and we give an explanation of it and step-by-step instructions towards the bottom of that consolidation page. But essentially, if you can consolidate the Parent PLUS loans twice, then they become eligible for the SAVE. They will become eligible for the SAVE plan, but that's only if you do it no later than July of 2025.
Let's bring in Nikki now in Mequonago with a question. Nikki, hi, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I work in a nonprofit sector, and I'm curious how the loan forgiveness that's attached to that, working in nonprofit for 10 years, how does that interact with the different loan forgiveness programs that the guest is talking about?
Betsy?
Yeah, so you're talking, Nikki's talking about a program called Public Service Loan Forgiveness. The way Public Service Loan Forgiveness works is that if the borrower works for either an eligible nonprofit, and all 501c3s are eligible and some other non-501c3s are as well, or a government employer, and that can be federal, state, local, or tribal, while making payments under an eligible plan. Now, an eligible plan would be any of the income-driven plans, including the new SAVE plan, as well as a 10-year standard plan. Once you make 120 payments while working for the eligible employer under one of those plans, if you still have a balance, they're going to forgive it.
Okay. Do you have to do paperwork or apply in order to take advantage of the public service loan forgiveness?
Of course you do. This is a government program. Thankfully, the public service loan forgiveness paperwork is not a heavy lift. And in fact, the Department of Education in the last couple years has developed something called the PSLF Help Tool that makes getting that paperwork filled out even easier. And you can use the PSLF Help Tool by going to studentaid.gov. So essentially what you should do, and I recommend, although not required, I recommend that borrowers that are pursuing PSLF to do this on an annual basis, is you fill out the PSLF form. It goes to your employer. They certify that you are employed there for at least 30 hours a week. And, you know, they'll go and give you credit, assuming you were on the right payment plan. They will give you credit for that period towards the 120 payments.
Betsy Mayotte helps borrowers navigate student loans, is president of the Institute of Student Loan Advisors. Be part of the discussion at any point. Call in with a question. Add your comments about student loans. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. If you carry federal student loans, payments are about to become due again after a three-year pause that gave borrowers relief in the pandemic. We explore what to be aware of in resuming these loan payments and hear your questions. Call in. You can also share insights at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Betsy Mayotte is founder of the Institute of Student Loan Advisors. Betsy, Tim from Rhinelander called in to ask about the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program we've been discussing. Do the last 3 years count as payments, even though none were made in the pause?
Yeah, so assuming that the borrower was working for eligible employment at the time and their loans weren't in default, or in school deferment, then absolutely, even though no payments were due, those 3.5 years count towards PSLF.
Okay, good to know, Tim. Thank you for that question. Tom now in Minneapolis. Tom, hi.
Hello?
Hi, Tom. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Great. Go ahead.
I have one quick question. My daughter graduated, came back home, got a job for a year, and now is in AmeriCorps. And I haven't been quite clear on whether or not AmeriCorps defers the loans or how that works.
AmeriCorps, the federal agency for service and volunteering. Betsy, can you explain?
Sure. So she can definitely postpone the loans. There's a specific forbearance for people in AmeriCorps. However, that's actually not what I would suggest. Because of her very low or no income by volunteering with AmeriCorps, I suggest that she apply for that SAVE plan that I mentioned before. That's going to give her a $0 payment, so effectively pause the payments anyway. And it'll also pause the interest, because remember, there's that really generous interest subsidy on the SAVE plan. And then those periods will count if she ends up going into public service after AmeriCorps. Her AmeriCorps service will also count towards PSLF. So even though there is a deferment forbearance for AmeriCorps, I actually suggest that she go on the SAVE plan instead.
Tom, any question about that approach? Yep.
I'm sorry. So she can find that on the federal loan website, the SAVE plan?
Yep. She can apply right there, studentaid.gov.
Tom, thanks for the question.
Can I say one other thing real quick? As a parent of kids who've gone through college and as somebody who paid off their student loans 10 years after he got them, they are the best loans you can ever get. So for any parents who are like, oh, my gosh, my kids have loans. No, I'm sorry. If that's the way you get your education and move through life, they're worth it. I just thought I would throw that out there.
Tom, thank you. Betsy, you know, Tom really making that point. These are important loans.
Yeah, so student loans are pretty controversial. You know, the term student debt crisis is used quite frequently. In my experience, I agree with Tom. I think student loans are an important tool to especially help the low and middle class families have access and choice when it comes to higher education. But, and I'm going to underline and bold that but, they need to be taken out thoughtfully. You need to look at, you know, unfortunately, the days of education for education's sake are gone. Higher education is very expensive, and sometimes the return on investment isn't there. So while I do think student loans have a role in ensuring access and choice in higher ed, I beg families to look at that option in a very thoughtful way and make sure that they're not borrowing more than makes sense for the return they're going to get on that degree.
Let's bring in Linda now in Milwaukee with a question. Linda, what's on your mind?
Hi, can you hear me?
We sure can. Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. I was wondering if you are under public service loan forgiveness or any other plan, and you still have some loans to consolidate. I was told that the point starts over, the counting year point. So I'm wondering, if I consolidate an additional loan or two, will that take away any of my time that I already have invested?
That's a really common question today. So it used to be, if you consolidated, it would reset your forgiveness count under either public service loan forgiveness or the forgiveness that's baked into the income-driven plans, that consolidation would reset that to zero. That's no longer the case. There's sort of two thresholds here. There's a waiver in place right now where if you consolidate before December 31st of this year, the consolidation will initially reset to zero, but at some point next year, you will be given credit for the oldest repayment history of the underlying loan. So you'll essentially get the highest count. If you consolidate after December 31st, the consolidation loan will be given a weighted average of the counts of the underlying loans.
Okay. Maybe a follow-up here on Linda's question. If you're carrying like old Perkins loans, what should you do with them?
It depends. Perkins loans, if you consolidate them into the direct loan program, you don't get credit for, towards forgiveness for payments made on the Perkins. However, by consolidating the old Perkins into the direct loan program, they then become eligible for things such as SAVE or public service loan forgiveness. Now, with that said, Perkins loans has their own forgiveness programs. So whether somebody should consolidate their Perkins or not is really a borrower-specific question.
Linda, is that helpful to you?
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. And it's good to know you have to do that before December 31st.
I appreciate your call, Linda. As we talk with Betsy Mayotte, president and founder of the Institute of Student Loan Advisors, fielding your questions about federal student loans as they become due in October again. You can join in with your question at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. So, Betsy, with the SAVE repayment plan that will cut many borrowers' monthly payments to $0, as you said, you can and save other borrowers around $1,000 a year. Why would a borrower prefer a different plan?
Oh, there's all kinds of reasons. So I think it's important to take a step back and think about what the goal is in choosing a student loan strategy. And, you know, especially these days, we get all caught up in the word forgiveness. And of course we do, right? Just, you know, if we can get our loans forgiven, why not? But the name of the game isn't forgiveness. The name of the game is paying the least amount over time out of your pocket. And for some people, that means pursuing a loan forgiveness program. But for other people, that means paying their loans off as aggressively as possible to reduce total interest cost. The vast majority of student loan borrowers are going to end up paying their loans in full and not see any forgiveness. So one reason not to go on the SAVE plan is if you can afford a higher payment and the SAVE plan's not going to give you any type of interest subsidy because your income is relatively high compared to your balance, then the SAVE plan might not be the best long-term strategy for you. Another scenario where SAVE might not be the best payment for you is if your income is very high compared to your loan balance. Say you have an income of 80 grand a year and you only owe 20,000 in student loans. In that scenario, SAVE is actually going to be a higher income-driven plan amount than the plan called income contingent repayment. So that's another scenario where save might not be the best option for the borrower.
So you really have to look very closely at your priorities. Like, is it to pay that loan off quickly with as little interest as possible over the years, or is it my top priority, a low monthly payment? So as you look at those different options, let's bring in Mike and Spooner. Mike, hi. Hi, Mike. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Good. Go ahead.
Well, my question is, if I take out a loan for a car, a house, or whatever, I'm expected to pay that back. So why does the government think they need to come in and pay these loans out? You should have, I mean, these kids are mature enough. They're signing the line. They know what they're getting into. If they can't, they should pay their loan back. That's how life works.
Mike, thank you. Betsy, how do you feel about that viewpoint there? You got to pay the loan back.
Yeah, I mean, we hear this a lot. You know, this administration especially has tried to put some things into place to make it easier for borrowers that struggle with their student loan debt. And I appreciate that. But what I find and I think some of those things are definitely needed. But what frustrates me is that we haven't done anywhere near as robust a conversation to ameliorate what is the actual problem. Student loans are the symptom of the problem. The problem is the cost of higher education. So unless and until we do something at the policy level to reduce the cost of education, then student loans, some people are going to continue to come out of school with unaffordable student loan debt.
Betsy Mayotte, advice for borrowers paying for college, as head of the nonprofit organization, the Institute of Student Loan Advisors, and there's space to discuss your situation or explore your question. Call in at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Bills are coming due for hundreds of thousands of Wisconsinites and tens of millions of Americans with federal student loans after the three-year payment pause. We get advice and hear what's on your mind. Call in with the question. Share concerns at 800-642-1234. Betsy Mayotte is president of the Institute of Student Loan Advisors. Betsy, we have an email here from Eric who asks, my wife has roughly $18,000 in student loans, all under 6% interest. We can get a better interest rate through our bank, but once we do, we will be exempt from possible loan forgiveness. Should we keep the 6% and hope something will come from the government, or do we reach out to our local bank?
So let me preface my answer by saying that I'm very financially conservative. In my 25 plus years of working with borrowers, I've seen all the ways that life can throw people a financial left hook. So for that reason, please don't refinance your federal loans out of the federal program into the private. Doing so means losing all the safety nets, not just potential forgiveness if there does end up being forgiveness, but also if there's a financial crisis. You lose access to the lower payment options and deferments, or if something really bad happens, like disability or God forbid death, you probably lose the opportunity for discharge. The only people that I would suggest maybe might be okay refinancing into the private loan program is someone who had a very substantial emergency fund where they could afford to make the payments even if, you know, maybe someone in the household had a job loss or became ill. But for the most part, please don't refinance. And if once you do, there's no take backsies. So once you refinance out of the federal program, that's it. You're gone forever.
Eric, thanks for that email at ideas@wpr.org. Betsy, let's turn our attention to servicers. When should borrowers contact their loan servicer to discuss the federal student loan repayments?
So your federal student loan servicer is going to be the best place to reach out because they have your loans. They know what you're eligible for and they have all the tools in front of them. With that said, as I've mentioned a couple times, we're in an extraordinary time, a once-in-a-lifetime event for student loans. So the call volume is incredibly high. It's not uncommon for me in the last couple months to hear from borrowers that say there's a 4 and 5 hour wait time. So just, you know, unfortunately, that's what's going to happen when everybody goes into repayment at the same time. So unfortunately, people are going to, as I like to say, put their patience pants on, try to call on sort of off hours. For no good reason, I'm hearing Thursdays have a lower volume. That doesn't mean people shouldn't call, but just be aware that they may be running into wait times. And again, their servicer is the best equipped to advise them on the different options they're eligible for.
The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau finds some student loan servicers have made it more difficult for borrowers to access lower payments and loan cancellation programs in the past. Are borrowers still having problems through loan servicers?
I mean, I do see issues. Sometimes paperwork is delayed or it gets lost, or unfortunately, especially if you encounter someone who's sort of new on the phone, some incorrect information can be given. But for the most part, the servicers are, you know, processing things correctly and giving out the correct information. But I'm not going to say that it's 100% perfect.
Liz from Lyons called in to discuss student loan payments later in life and trying to collect Social Security, how that might be affected by unpaid student loans. What are your insights there?
You know, this is a topic that's near and dear to my heart. One of the sort of myths out there, even with policymakers, is that student loan debt is a young person's issue, and that is not the case anymore. Half of all student loan borrowers are over the age of 30, a quarter are over 45, and the fastest growing population of borrowers that are struggling with student debt are the over 65s. Now, if you should default on a federal student loan, one of the remedies that the Department of Education has is that they can garnish, without a court being involved, they can garnish your Social Security. And I've seen it happen many, many times. On the flip side of that, I want to go back to those income-driven plans that we've been talking about throughout the hour. If you're on a fixed income and your income is lower because you've retired, then I'd strongly urge you to look into those income-driven plans, because you could end up with a $0 payment and forgiveness down the line.
What is your advice for older borrowers who are repaying federal student loans, nearing that retirement age, and also have a kid about to go to college or in college who is accruing student debt?
Just to be mindful of the long-term future. As I mentioned before, student loans definitely have their place in ensuring access and choice in higher education, but they should be treated delicately and thoughtfully. So especially if you're nearing retirement, I would project a budget and how much are you going to be able to afford in student loan payments, and don't borrow more than that. And if that means that that particular college isn't affordable, there's alternatives. There's going part-time and having the student work to help pay their tuition. There's attending a lower-priced school and then transferring later on into the higher-priced school. But nobody should be putting their retirement in peril over student loan debt.
Betsy Mayotte with us, president and founder of the Institute of Student Loan Advisors. Betsy, a consumer watchdog with the U.S. Public Interest Research Group in Cleveland, says scammers are aware of the challenges borrowers are experiencing and they could try to take advantage in this moment. What scams should borrowers be aware of?
Are. These people make me crazy, and I hope every one of them steps on a Lego every time they get out of bed. what we're seeing with the scammers is they're taking advantage of the times that we're in, and they will offer things like forgiveness or we can get you a $0 payment, and they charge very high fees. And usually the mildest ones is they're charging very high fees for access to programs that borrowers can access themselves easily for free. There's never a fee to get into things like the lower payment options or income-driven plans or to consolidate. The worst actors in this space are the ones that not only charge a fee, but they change all the contact information on the borrower's account and then disappear. And the next thing the borrower knows, they're in default. So if and they make themselves appear to be related to the Department of Ed or the servicers. So if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And nobody should ever have to pay for help with their student loans.
All right. Bill in Waukesha is here. Bill, hi.
Yes, I think your guest hit the nail right on the head about the cost of education. And there's no cost control because of the availability of loans. So the real fix to the whole problem is to eliminate student loans as a legal option. That will fix both cost and student loan debt defaults.
Bill, thank you for those insights. Betsy, how about that perspective, eliminating student loans altogether?
I respectfully disagree with our friend Bill. Eliminating student loans entirely would also eliminate access and choice to low and middle income families. I prefer as a solution to re-incentivize the states to reinvest in higher education. If you think about state schools as so-called anchor price schools, if we can get those schools' cost way down, then the private schools that are charging $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year, that doesn't pass the laugh test anymore if the state school is only, say, $5,000 or $10,000 to attend. So I think student loans have their place to ensure access and choice. To me, the real solution is getting the states to reinvest in higher ed and getting those anchor price schools down in cost.
All right. So in our last 30 seconds we have together, what are you watching for in this repayment rollout?
I'm watching to make sure that especially some of the most vulnerable borrower populations get the assistance they need to be able to effectively manage their student loans. I'm watching to make sure to see if we have any additional delays due to this all of a sudden spike in volume. And I'm watching to see what's going to happen with the Biden administration's sort of attempt at a second bite at the apple to loan forgiveness. And we should start seeing some progress in that direction by the end of this year.
Betsy, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. I had a blast.
Betsy Mayotte, president of the Institute of Student Loan Advisors. Earlier in the conversation, Betsy mentioned the site studentaid.gov, operated by the U.S. Department of Education for borrowers, studentaid.gov. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.